morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
Good morning, Sensei.
Has anyone ever heard of the poet called Stonehouse? I didn't think so. You know, when you order books from Amazon, you get never-ending promotions for various books and other things. And I had, about a month ago, ordered a book on Amazon. And then, you know, what they do initially is they promote books in the same category. So Buddhism in general and any books that are new, you're probably familiar with this. So one of the books that was in the promotion, there's just something about it. I can't really say why, but it's called The Mountain Poems of Stonehouse. And it's translated by Red Pine, who is a fabulous translator and a really sweet guy. He's very simple and straightforward, unpretentious. So I love this book. It's beautiful. And so I wanted to share some of it with you because Stonehouse expresses the Dharma very clearly, straightforward. So I wanted, I guess, in the beginning to create a context for who he is and then read some of his poems. So I started initially to make notes and, you know, talk about the context of Stonehouse. And he writes poems that are 7 syllables and 5 syllables. So I guess rather than reinvent the wheel, I hope you indulge me. I'm going to read some of the introduction by Red Pine to give you the backdrop of who Stonehouse was. So Red Pine starts out in saying, "If you've never heard of Stonehouse, you're not alone." So when I asked you that question, that's not surprising. "Not many people have, even in China." And he was a Chinese poet. "Even among Buddhists, much less poets. So back in the early 1980s, this is Red Pine talking, "when I was translating poems of Han Shan, or Cold Mountain, one of the Chinese editions I was using was published by Taiwan's Xin Wen Feng. You'll have to pardon my pronunciation of the Chinese poets and teachers. So it was published by Taiwan's Xin Wen Feng Publishing Company, and it included poems by 2 other Buddhist poets. And when I got to the end of the Cold Mountain poems, translations of them, there was Stonehouse waiting for me. I couldn't believe my good fortune. I was captivated by his poems, just like me. So I share his good fortune. And yet I couldn't find anyone in Taiwan who had ever heard of him. Undeterred, once I finished Cold Mountain poems, I translated Stonehouse's as well. Publishing them, though, was a problem. It was hard enough finding a publisher in America for Cold Mountain, who at least had a reputation of sorts. Trying to interest a publisher in Stonehouse was a non-starter. I ended up publishing his mountain poems myself in a limited edition distributed by my friends at Empty Bowl in Port Townsend. So Stonehouse was born in 1272 in the town of Changshu, which is not far from where the Yangtze River empties into the East China Sea. Nothing is known about his family or his early life other than his father's surname was Wen and his mother's surname was Liu, and that he received the traditional Confucian education for someone from a family of means. No one knows either when he started using the name Stonehouse or why. He probably picked up the name while he was studying to become an official. It was the name of a cave in Yushan, just outside his hometown. Yushan was known for its pine trees, its rock formations, and its springs. In particular, a spring that flowed out of a cave as big as a house. Locals still call the cave Stonehouse. So despite Stonehouse's Confucian upbringing, when he was 20, he changed tracks. He quit his studies and became a novice under the guidance of Master Yong Wei, and after 3 years was formally ordained and given the monastic name Qing Kung. Being a young monk, he did what many young monks did back then and still do today. he sought further instruction. One day, soon after his ordination, he saw a monk walk past his door, wearing a broad-brimmed straw hat, the kind that travelers wore to keep the sun out of their eyes and the rain off their shoulders. The monk also had a hiking staff. When Stonehouse asked, "Where is he going?" the monk said he was going to Tianmushan to see Cao Feng Yuan Miao, not meow like cat's meow, M-A-I-O, a great Zen master of the time. He invited Stonehouse to join him. The monk invited Stonehouse to join him. And the two monks journeyed there together. And so it wasn't far, maybe 4 or 5 day journey on foot. So following their arrival, Cao Feng asked Stonehouse, "Why did you come? The Dharma isn't easy to find. You'll need to burn your fingers for incense." To this, Stonehouse replied, "But I see the master before me with my own eyes. How could the Dharma be hidden?" Cao Feng nodded his approval and suggested Stonehouse study the koan, "All things come back to one." So Stonehouse stayed with Cao Feng for 3 years, serving with diligence but without satisfying his quest for the Dharma. And Stonehouse finally decided to leave and went to announce his departure. Cao Feng said, "You are still a blind donkey. But over in Huai Watershed, there's a master named Qian. Why don't you go see him?" So Stonehouse followed the suggestion, and he traveled west to the old capital of Nanqing, crossed the Yangtze River, and found Qian outside Jianyang. Qian asked Stonehouse where he came from, and Stonehouse told him, "From Tianmu." Qian asked, "And what instruction did you receive?" And Stonehouse said, "All things come back to the One." When Qian asked, "What does that mean?" Stonehouse didn't answer. Qian said, "Those words are dead. Where did you pick up such rot?" Stonehouse bowed and asked to be instructed. Qian said, "Tell me what this means. Don't stop where there are Buddhas. Hurry past where there aren't any Buddhas." Stonehouse answered, "I don't understand." And Qian replied, "More dead words." Stonehouse still didn't understand, but he decided to stay with Qian. Finally, one day Qian asked him what the koan about Buddhas meant. And Stonehouse answered, "When you mount a horse, you see the road." And Qian said to him, "You've been here now for 6 years, and that is all you have learned?" Exasperated, Stonehouse left, but on his way down the mountain, he looked up and he saw a pavilion. Suddenly he understood. He hurried back to Qian. "Don't stop where there are Buddhas. Those words are dead. Hurry past where there aren't any Buddhas. Those words are dead too. Now I understand living words." Qian asked, "And what do you understand?" And Stonehouse answered, "When the rain finally stops in late spring, the oriole sings from a tree." Qian nodded his approval. And later, when Stonehouse decided to leave, Qian told him, "In the future, we will share the same niche." So down the road a piece, Stonehouse is eventually invited to become the meditation master, the teacher at a particular temple. And it was a prestigious post in the monastic world. But after a short stay, Stonehouse decided he preferred the mountains. Now, it was very common back in those days for teachers and students of the way to leave the everyday world and go into the mountain. And if you remember Dogen's poem or writing about seeing the mountains walking, you know, the idea was, the metaphor was, if you just look at a mountain from a distance, you don't appreciate the mountain. But if you enter the mountain, if you become a mountain, you see the mountain walking. You see all of the activity of the mountain, which is the whole mountain, yet manifesting all this activity. So back in the day, and even today still, teachers and other students of Zen entered the mountain and lived in the mountains. So Stonehouse became tired of being a teacher and decided to enter the mountains. He traveled back to Huchao, and 20 kilometers south of the city, he took up residence at the southern summit of Siamushan, where he built a hut and began his life as a hermit. The year was 1312, and he was 40 years old. A contemporary wrote that Stonehouse lived a hard life, refusing to beg for food in a nearby village, unlike other hermits. And when he ran out of food, he survived on water and wild plants. According to this early account, he was hard on himself, but generous and kind to others. Stonehouse enjoyed the seclusion of the mountains for 20 years, until the year of 1331. So this was when he was asked to come back and join a temple that was originally built in 1312 by the emperor's father. And once the rebuilding was finished, he asked Stonehouse to take over the temple as an abbot. Stonehouse at first declined, but was admonished. If monks are supposed to work for the benefit of the Dharma, how can they succeed while living in idleness and isolation? And so Stonehouse left Siamushan and took up his post as the abbot of Fuyan Temple. And while he was there, he gave instruction in Zen. But his heart remained in the mountains. So finally, after 7 years, he pleaded old age, and in 1338 he returned to the mountain. And it was toward the end of the second stay, around the year 1350, that he compiled the mountain poems that this book contains, which included poems that spanned both periods of residence, the first time he was in the mountains and the second time he was in the mountains. You get a feel for who Stonehouse was, and that he had been a teacher of some renown a couple of times, and he was drawn to the mountains. And I want to share with you some of his poems. So open your minds and open your hearts and take this in. Stripped of conditions, my mind is at rest. Emptied of existence, my nature is at peace. How often at night have my windows turned white as the moon and the stream passed by my door. I built my hut on top of Sia Summit. Plowing and hoeing make up my day. A half dozen terraced fields, two or three hermit neighbors. I made a pond for the moon, and I sell wood to buy grain. An old man with few schemes, now you know everything I own. So Stonehouse is in the mountains, really emptying himself and expressing this through these poems. And so he continues with these poems to express the Dharma, to express the way. I sleep in the clouds where the sun doesn't shine, beside a high cliff and a mountain stream. I dream on my cot until the moon fills the window. The porridge is done when the stove smoke clears. A million reasons vanish without being driven off. Our single perfect nature shines by itself. As clear as a cloudless sky, it never changes. The sea, meanwhile, is now a mulberry grove. So as I read these poems, just appreciate the directness, the simplicity. Not a lot of complication, a lot of thought, just a direct expression of experience. My Zen hut rests upon the rocks at the summit. Clouds fly past and more clouds arrive. A waterfall hangs in space beyond the door. A mountain ridge rises like a wave in back. I drew three Buddhas on a wall. I put a plum branch in a jar for incense. But the fields down below might be level, but can't match a mountain's freedom from dust. A trail through green mist, red clouds, and bamboo, to a hut that stays cold and dark all day. Simply let go, and worries end. Stop to think, and cares reappear. An unpolished mirror holds countless shapes. A great bell resounds only when it is rung. Our original nature is the one true Buddha, not form or emptiness, not past or present. Okay, so the next poems I'd like you to listen to, because I think as you listen to these poems, a very subtle problem begins to arise. Seclusion, of course, means far from the world. Thick moss, deep words, and perfumed plants. The sight of mountains, rain or shine. No sounds of a market, day or night. I burn dry leaves in my stove to make tea, and patch my old robe. I cut a cloud by the cliff. Lifetimes seldom fill 100 years. Why suffer chasing profit and fame? Seclusion, of course, means far from the world. No sounds of a market, day or night. Why suffer chasing profit or fame? My broken-down hut rests upon rocks. Why do I leave my door open all day? People who file into exam halls don't set foot on an ancient trail. Snow-filled nights, a fire is my lone companion. Frost-covered dawn, I hear a gibbon howl. My tattered monk's robe isn't easy to mend. I cut a new patch when the clouds roll in. People who file into exam halls. A monk on his own sits quiet and relaxed. He survives all year on what karma brings. Bamboo and yellow flowers simplify his thoughts. His life is as plain as a cloud or stream. He doesn't mistake a rock for a tiger on a hill, or image of a bow for a snake in his bowl. Oblivious in the woods to worldly affairs, at sunset he watches the crows flying back. Oblivious in the woods to worldly affairs. All right, so anybody have any ideas, those last few poems, what the problem is or what I see could be a problem? As I was, reading these poems, I think that there subtly is a problem with his view. It reminded me of the koan. What do you do when you get to the top of the 100-foot pole? And one of the responses to that is you step off. And so what is the 100-foot pole and what does stepping off mean? And in these poems, I think that in some ways, that Stonehouse has gotten to the top of the pole, but he hasn't stepped off. And so one of the interpretations or one of the expressions of that koan is that getting to the top of the 100-foot pole is attaining enlightenment. But the koan means you can't stop there. You have to step off the pole and live out your understanding of the way, your enlightenment experience, in everyday life. And I think what Stonehouse has done, and a lot of these monks do, they eschew, they put down, they find the worldly things that go on to be less than, so they choose to live in the mountains. And the challenge, I think, of the practice isn't to become enlightened. It's to use that enlightenment to go back and serve others in the everyday world. That's probably my prejudice. But it was interesting that he would grumble. I mean, there's a lot of other poems in here about the secular life, the everyday life. And to me, he was subtly saying that what he was doing was better than living in the everyday world. The subtle other side of this is when I make this observation, I'm also making a judgment, setting up living in the mountains versus living your experience out. But again, that koan, the 100-foot pole, really there is a challenge on the one hand to live out your enlightenment in the secular world, you know, people like Bernie Glassman, who are, you know, deeply involved in working with poverty, bearing witness retreats at places like Auschwitz, and, you know, not just Zen teachers, but there are a lot of spiritual teachers who work with the problems of the world and don't choose to go and live on a mountain. So I guess my bias is to not leave and go in the mountains, but to stay here. But it's important not to set up one versus the other, that one is good, one is bad. I just wanted to point out from my own point of view that he chose to leave what he would sort of talk down about, which was the marketplace, which was everyday life. So I found that interesting. But if you get a chance, it's called The Mountain Poems of Stonehouse. And, I mean, one is better than the next. I didn't find any poem that I didn't like. It's just a beautiful book. So, thanks for listening.
Thank you, Sensei.